Back to My Garden, episode 84.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardening. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. It's finally here. 99 remarkably clever gardening shortcuts that you can use immediately. It's a free report, you get instant access. It's an epic list of tips, hacks, and gardening ideas just for you. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/clever. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to a special edition of Back to My Garden. For those of you listening, hang on to your socks. This is going to be an awesome episode. I've been working diligently on building a list of people that I wanted to talk to in 2015. And fortunately enough, I have this lady in the studio. Melinda has a master's degree in horticulture, is a certified arborist, and was a horticulture instructor with tenure. She's hosted the Plant Doctor radio program for over 20 years, as well as 7 seasons of Great Lakes Gardener on PBS. She hosted Yardworks, a nationally syndicated yard care and garden show where she interviewed celebrities in their own gardens. Sounds like what I do. She was a contributing editor and columnist for Backyard Living magazine and has written articles for Better Homes and Gardens and Fine Gardening. She's written 20-plus gardening books, has won virtually every award and recognition possible in horticulture and media, and currently Melinda hosts the nationally syndicated Melinda's Garden Moment. These segments air on over 125 TV and radio stations throughout the U.S. She's here today because my lovely wife saw Melinda's educational DVDs in the Great Courses catalog and said, "Holy moly, David, you need to call her." She's modern-day gardening royalty, and I'm excited that she's here today. We have a ton to talk about. Please welcome to the show the legendary gardener, Melinda Myers. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, Dave. Thank you. And I guess what I really like to be introduced as is a regular gardener, just like you and everyone else out there, because that really is what my passion is. I'm lucky to work in what I'm passionate about and what brings me pleasure. And so this is just part of the journey that I've been able to take. So I feel very lucky, and lucky I get to talk to people like you. So thank you for having me.
For those of you listening and playing the home game, don't try to take notes. We're just going to talk about gardening for 30 minutes. Keep both hands on the wheel. I'm going to have all of Melinda's links and resources up on the blog at Back to My Garden, episode 83. If you're on Twitter, make sure you connect with Melinda on Twitter at Melinda Gardens. And for sure, I want you to bookmark Melinda's amazing blog and resource site. It's at www.melindamyers.com, and that's with a Y. And that'll also be on Back to My Garden. Melinda, where do we start? You've had a storied career. Can I take you back to the beginning, to when you first kind of said, I'm going to get into this gardening thing? Where did you begin?
You know, what's always funny, and I think as we look back at our life, we often see the path that brought us to where we are. But going forward, I wouldn't have guessed this is where I would end up. I look back, and I remember in second grade learning plant parts, and it really stood out. In middle school, I did a science project on tropisms on plants, kind of nerdy kid. And then in high school, I never dissected a frog in my whole career, but I'd cut up plants. And so I think, wow, I had plants everywhere. My dad had a garden, but wouldn't let my brother and I in. So I think there's some truth to, okay, if you deny your children the right to garden, maybe they'll think it's exciting. And so in middle school, I started growing house plants and tropicals, and, you know, would walk through the woods, do morel hunting with my dad and my grandmother, and picking raspberries. So I think I was surrounded. And then when I got into college, I love science, I like people, I love nature, and that brought it all together in horticulture. And I moved my gardening joy outdoors at that time. I ran a community garden program when I moved to Wisconsin for a summer job and have never left. but I found the joy of growing vegetables. My dad let my brother, my mom and I one summer start his garden when he was working overseas, and he left pages of directions, and this is what I want you to do, here's how you start. That was the only time he let me in his garden, as a matter of fact, and I think I got the bug at that point, just watching things grow, whether it was a plant in the house, or it was a cucumber outside, or tasting those fresh from the garden tomatoes. Or for me, the power of trees. You know, when you see an ancient tree and you wrap your arms around it, and you can just feel the power. I think the outdoors has just, it's kind of been, you know, combination of a lot of different people and opportunities coming together to create this love of nature and gardens.
Wow. You've given us a lot to build on there. I've started to take some notes. Can you describe for our overseas listeners hunting through the woods for morels?
I know, and you must be a morel hunter, because morels are one of the only, other than puffballs, mushrooms I'll hunt out and eat. Otherwise, I'm, you know, pretty nervous about eating things that I haven't grown. But morels come in the spring after a warm rain or cool spring with some rain, and then you get a couple warm days. They grow in the kind of decaying mat around elm trees and oaks, and they are amazing. I don't know if it's the morel or all the butter you cook them in, but it's great. I remember when I first moved to Wisconsin, I was on an answering service. I worked for the Extension Service, and somebody called up and said, "Do you know where I can find morels?" And I went, "If I did, I couldn't tell you. Any good morel hunter will not share their good spots." And I've only found a few here in Wisconsin, though I keep looking. And it's just a wonderful experience. It's a good excuse to get out in the woods. You've got to peek under the leaf litter. You've got to have a keen eye, because they're usually coming up in the leaf litter, and they're brown and white, and they look like kind of a funky little tree shape, and oh, they're so tasty. What we used to do is we'd flour them and cook them up in a little bit of butter, and oh, that was a meal in and of itself. And so it's kind of an exciting, instead of hunting for animals, hunting for something edible, and it's, you know, I always find going out with a purpose just makes the experience all that much more fun.
Sensational. I want to ask you about the first gardening book you wrote. We have a lot of listeners that want to write. They have their first book inside them, and they're nervous, and they're procrastinating. How did you write your first book?
You know, I was very lucky, I have to say. I was working as an extension agent, and Cool Springs Press approached me and asked me if I would be interested in writing a book. The weird part is, though, a year earlier, Jim Wilson, some of you may know from the Victory Garden, who has since passed, said to me, "You need to write a book, and that's your next step in your career." And a year later, I was offered the opportunity. I write a lot. I write articles, blogs, you know, tips, radio tips, TV tips, lots of writing. And I thought, oh, a book's a piece of cake. Fortunately, I had a lot of people in the business that gave me some good advice, and one was to break that book down to size. So sometimes when you look at a book, it's so overwhelming. You know, even though I wrote a lot, that's a lot to do and organize and get into a good organized system. So I actually, what I did is I listed all of my chapters and the plants featured, and I would cross them off, and I'd burn that page when I finished it in the grill. Yay, it's done. And I was able to push through it. Good support from friends and family. I would get up at 2 a.m. I'm a morning person, and I found I needed my peak time and quiet. I think the other thing is just start writing, and find the time when you're most productive and where you can be left alone. I wrote in my car sometimes in the park, because that was the only place I could find peace and quiet. I wrote in my spare bedroom office, but I found for me, getting up early, for me, that's when my mind is fresh, as opposed to the end of the day, and I just started writing. So I was lucky. I had somebody come to me with an opportunity to put all my experience to work, but I think it's really just about thinking about what's your passion, what do you want to talk about, what do you have to offer that you think would be very helpful. You know, I'm a gardener as well as a professional, and so I garden. I have limited time, like most of us. My budget throughout time has always been limited on and off. I like to repurpose items. I hate throwing stuff in the landfill if I don't need to. And so I've met a lot of wonderful gardeners who shared with me. And I wanted to capture that because I felt that was the gift I could give my readers. Share what I've learned along the way, whether it was by doing it or other gardeners sharing with me. So think about what is it you want to share, and boy, you'll find the words will just start flowing.
You know, you've written so many books, and they're all like kids and grandkids. I almost hesitate to ask you, do you have a book that's like a personal favorite, or if they're new to listening or reading your words, where would they start? What's your book for the beginner?
You know, there's two, one's out of print, and I have to tell you, the Ultimate Garden Guide from Birds in Bloom, the reason I liked that book is I remember sitting down with my editor, and we created the book together, and he said, well, how do you want to do this? I said, I want to write the book the way you build a garden. And I want to start with the soil. And I'll never forget the look on Jeff's face. You want to open a book with soil? And I said, it's the foundation of the garden and it's important. And he let me. And so I own the rights to that book. So they'll be coming out in some format in the near future because I really want to repurpose that book. And so I loved it because I could build the book like I built a garden. My other favorite is small space gardening because until 2 years ago, I was gardening on a city lot, and I had a fun editor that got my sense of humor, you know, the gardening sense of humor that I think, you know, we as gardeners have a weird sense of humor that we only get, and other people kind of roll their eyes at us, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably my other favorite one, and it's still in print, and tips on just how to create small space in your landscape, you know, outdoor living spaces, or if you only have small space, how to maximize the beauty. So those... I'm a two. I got it down to two. How's that?
Nice. Listeners, make sure, Melinda mentioned repurposing. Head over to Melinda's site and bookmark it at melindamyers.com because you also have audio clips up there under your podcast category. I thought that was a brilliant idea because they're all topical.
Thank you. Yeah, one of the things, when you're passionate, you learn things in the garden. Getting old as a gardener, the good part about that is one more season under your belt, one more chance to learn something new because every year is different. The bad part are the knees and the back, but, you know, we all learn how to deal with those. And so I always told my students when I was teaching, getting old as a horticulturist is good from the standpoint that you will know more every year, but you won't live long enough to know it all. So you need to talk to other gardeners. Find out what they know because gardeners love to share. One master gardener shared this great advice with me when I was training master gardeners. He said, if I have a dollar and you have a dollar, I give you mine, you give me yours, I still only have a dollar. I have an idea, you have an idea. We share, now we both have two. And I thought, that's a powerful lesson that information is not designed to hold tight to it. Rather, it's to share and pass along because, boy, you get way more back than you give out.
Ooh, I'm writing this down before I forget it. It's recorded. We're on a podcast. Training Master Gardeners, the powerful lesson of great idea sharing. That's strong.
Yeah.
I love that. The listeners are itching to hear about your garden last season. We're kind of in that beautiful lull between really getting at it. You know, you have snow on your ground, I have snow on my ground.
Yeah.
What was 2014 gardening like for you?
Well, I'll have to tell you, this is a hysterical story. I did two courses for Great Courses. Trees and Shrubs is out. Edibles is coming out this spring. And, of course, we had a cool, wet spring in 2013 where we were trying to install a deer fence because now I have 11 acres, space, lots of wildlife. And I thought, if I'm shooting gardens, I can't shoot things and go, well, you should have seen it yesterday before the deer ate it. So we were trying to get deer fencing installed. The ground froze early in 2013. It has cool and wet in 2014. The polar vortex was over, right? And it was 15, 19 below zero, 3 feet of snow. And I just kept thinking, oh, how are we going to get these gardens built? We finally got a thaw. We started designing the gardens in May and installing them and shooting as we went. So it was a year of... I had done some planning, but you know plans always change as you get your first shovel in the ground. So the start was a little later than I wanted. We but it was exciting. I have great soil in my old house in Milwaukee, 27 years. It was wonderful. I moved to sand and rock country. And the gardens weren't, you know, I created new gardens. So we tried lasagna gardening. We did raised beds. We just amended existing soil because I wanted to show the different techniques, and also straw bale gardening and containers, of course. And so it was great because I got to do a wide variety. I had the best potatoes I've ever grown, plenty of squash, good watermelon. My tomato crop, not as good as I'd like. I had enough for fresh, but I plant disease. We had cool, wet summer, and so a lot of disease issues. And I got them in late. So, you know, as every gardener, I have my list. Okay, here's what I'm doing different. Here's what I'm going to try. Planted some fruit trees and raspberries. I've always wanted raspberries. Now I have sunshine and space. So planting for the future as well as enjoying the summer. I love cooking when I have fresh vegetables. You know, I'm not a great cook, but anybody can be a great cook when you can pick it from the garden and cook it up and serve it. And boy, it was a great summer to be able to go out, pick the herbs I needed, a lot of the fresh vegetables, and bring them in and cook them. And I had enough space to grow what we needed fresh, a lot of cabbage. So I've got some sauerkraut I made, and I made my grandma's famous pickles. My dad and I always loved and made together. So it was a good season, not the best season. And I think every gardener is always like, well, next year is going to be better, and here's what I'm going to do. So I'm at that stage, looking at the snow, planning for the changes for 2015.
Outstanding. You hit all my hot buttons. I took a bunch of notes there. You probably heard a bunch of people's ears perk up because you said container gardens. We have a large number of listeners in urban centers with little patio containers. Can you share maybe a tip or a good piece of wisdom for someone who's just getting started with patio containers?
You bet. One is just try it. And then make it edible and ornamental. I think sometimes we think we can only do flowers or only do annuals. Boy, containers give you a lot of flexibility. Even though I have 11 acres, I still have containers. I like to bring my garden to my back door. I have plants that attract the hummingbirds right outside the window of my living room, herbs so that right by my grill so I can pluck what I need and use them fresh there. So here's the key. Pick a container that, you know, it doesn't have to be fancy, but should have drainage holes. Find a potting mix that works for you. We all are a little bit different. I like something that's a little more forgiving. Often I'll put soil, topsoil in with a potting mix, so finding a good quality potting mix is the easiest way to go. Water thoroughly and then check it daily. Fortunately, there are irrigation systems you can purchase, you know, drip irrigations that you can set on a timer so that if watering is an issue, self-watering pots are great. I use those quite a bit. And then I like to mix my edibles. So if you want something tall, maybe it's a tomato on a decorative stake, or maybe it's some beans trained up on a trellis. You want something trailing, strawberries. Get some ever-bearing strawberries, and you can pluck those from a container or a hanging basket for your cereal in the morning. So think about creative ways of combining beauty and edibility in a pot, and just do it. And you know what? We've all killed plants. It's okay. Next year will be better.
When you said strawberries, I have a little 2x2 raised bed with yellow strawberries.
Ooh.
Yeah, first time, did okay. And as the season was coming in the fall, I said, I got to get a straw bale for that. And I kept putting it off and putting it off. And I think the frost pretty much has taken it, so I'll see in the spring.
Well, and you bring up a good point. You know, I was leading a tour to Costa Rica, and I thought I had another week or two of warm weather, and we got back to hoses frozen to the ground, containers frozen to the ground. Luckily, we got a little thaw so I could finish cleaning up. But I'm going to wait and see on a few things as well that weren't quite protected the way normally would. We had 9 degrees that I wasn't expecting. But I'm like you. I've been surprised. There are times that I thought those plants would be dead for sure, and they survived. And other times you do everything right and it doesn't work. But the key is, I heard this great quote that every green thumb gardener has grown lots of plants, killed quite a few along the way. They just don't talk about the ones that died. But like you, I like to share my failures because I think you learn more from what goes wrong than what goes right. And you know, I talk about some, you know, some things die, but more is going to live than is going to die. And so you're going to reap the benefit of your efforts and create great memories, too.
You know, Melinda, I looked at the clock and our time is whipping by. And now is the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
Okay.
This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with novice gardeners. Are you ready to play?
Okay.
Question number one, and for my listeners, these are new questions for 2015. My mom in Edmonton said, change up those questions. And so here we go. Question one. What's the funniest gardening mistake that you've ever made that you're willing to admit to in public?
I've tried three sisters, that growing technique, corn to support the beans, to support the squash. I tried it in a big pot in my small garden. The corn got 4 inches tall, the beans covered it, and the squash got squashed by 4. So it was, I didn't take that container to our state fair where I was going to use it for my talk. So finally, I've done three sisters in the ground, and it looked good this year, but it was my third attempt.
Wow. Good stuff. Question number two. If you were only allowed to grow three plants for the rest of your life, what would the three plants be?
Oh, I hate this question. I used to ask my students this all the time. A service berry or amelanchier or shadblow, different names, great four-season interest fruit you can eat. Maybe strawberries because they're ornamental and edible and fun. I might do, and probably a beech tree, just because of the power and the longevity.
Wow.
And if you ask me tomorrow, I'll probably change my mind.
Change it up, yeah. That first one caught me off guard. Can you say more about that berry? I'm not familiar with it.
Amelanchier service berry. It is a tree. You can get tree forms or shrub forms. They have white flowers in the spring. They have fruit in June. It's also called Juneberry. You may know it that by that name. Okay. And the fruit starts out pink, and then it looks like a blueberry. It has a nutty blueberry flavor. The birds love it, but you can eat it. It makes great pies and muffins, or I just eat them as I weed my garden. Great fall color, kind of a brick red or orange and yellow, and smooth gray bark in the winter. So four seasons of interest. And the birds, in my city lot, I had one in the front, and it was a Princess Diana grand. It was the large tree form, and I would see the birds feeding on the berries right outside my second floor window in the summer. It was great. It was just wonderful.
Amazing. You made me smile. Part of the bargaining chip for me to get into the garden to weed with my wife is I get a handful of raspberries. It's kind of a reward system.
And it works, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm very motivated by food, like the old carrot and the stick.
I think most of us.
Good. Question three, I want all the listeners to go to your website at melindamyers.com. For a rookie gardener, can you recommend one or two good websites or blogs that you use like a resource?
Well, I use the Missouri Botanical Garden website. They have a great plant database, and they're, you know, middle of the U.S., so I know we've got listeners all around the world, but they give you some really good information, and that's one that I use quite a bit. The other one is, I'm going to cheat a little bit, is go to your local extension service or outreach arm of the university, because that's going to be information that's local. Most of them have information on gardening, or pick one nearby, because that'll really tell you about gardening in your area, and I think that's really important. I'm lucky enough to travel a lot. When I travel, I always visit that local extension service just to kind of get a better feel, you know, for what's unique about that area where I'm going to speak, so I'm prepared for the soil. You know, I understand the science of horticulture, but it's always good to get the insight into some of the challenges in the area.
I know that you just made me think of something. For those of you listening that have garden clubs and events, you cannot get anyone as good as Melinda. You have to, agents and booking can go through your main site, right?
You bet.
Yeah, you bet.
There's a place to ask me to speak. And I love to, you know, that's a fun part. Somebody said, do you like traveling so much? I said, I get to hang out with gardeners and talk about gardening, and it's so much fun. And like I mentioned earlier, I always feel I walk away with more knowledge. And that's part of what I love about my profession and my hobby of gardening.
Question number four is, on books. The best way to find good gardening books is to talk to a great gardener. For a rookie just getting into gardening, do you have one or two recommendations or favorites on gardening books?
Boy, you know, the American, that's probably, you know, and I thought about this and I was ready and now I'm rethinking it. If you're into perennials, The Well-Tended Perennial Garden by Tracy DeSabato-Oust has really good step-by-step information. And, you know, you kind of have to think, even if you don't do all that, it'll still come out well. Probably I'm going to go back to Cool Springs Press. I wrote, and I'm not recommending just mine, the garden book for several states and month-by-month gardening, but there are authors in different parts of the U.S., so sorry for our international friends, that have written similar books. So, you know, Tom McCubbin in Florida and Bob Polomsky in the Carolinas and Sharon Asakawa in California and Nan Sturman in California, where they have local experts that really talk about the basics, plants that you should start with, hardy, easy to find, good for the area, and then the month-by-month complimentary edition talks about what to do when. And at least for our U.S. gardeners, I think that's a really good place to start because it's for your area and it's kind of here's what you need to do in January, here's what you need to do in February. And so it's a good place that I find experienced gardeners, students have used the books, as well as beginner gardeners find it useful. So if you can get a hold of those, I think those are really good. I'm going to throw that question back to you. Do you have a favorite that you recommend for beginning gardeners?
Well, I'll give you an example. My wife picked up a book by Nikki Jabour, and Nikki's from Nova Scotia, Canada. She has a radio show, and there's like 50 plus chapters all written by expert gardeners.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
There's a chapter in there called about figs, and the expert on figs was a gentleman named Stephen Biggs from Toronto. So my wife, the next day, look out on the back patio, and there's a pail with a tree in it. She bought Nikki's book, read a couple chapters, said, "You should call Stephen Biggs," and then went and bought a fig.
Kind of
like
how you
call him. Yeah, you know, so. But it's so cold here in the winter, Melinda, and I'm a little nervous. It's a young tree.
I've got brown turkey and Chicago hardy in my garden, and I'm feeling the same way as you because, you know, like you guys, we've been having a lot of below zero weather, so it's the real test, right?
Well, mine has been brought indoors and took the spot in the garage where the golf clubs were.
Okay.
That's now a roommate. Maybe next season it'll stay in the garden. But Nikki Jabour's book, you can't go wrong.
Well, I'm going to check that out. Thank you. I'm always looking for good reads and good information to pass along, so thank you for letting me put you on the spot here.
What struck me as we were talking about that is how much we take for granted as gardeners with our access to information. A century ago, you couldn't just go to a website and find what grew in my zone.
Right.
It's a golden age. I mean, you've seen this now 20 years. Do you think like I do, like there's a whole new wave of growth coming in gardening?
I do. You know, I started my career in the late 70s when there was some, you know, the green movement and a lot of houseplants and tropicals. And, you know, there was somewhat of an energy crisis everyone's kind of forgotten about. And then the economy got better and people quit growing vegetables. And a lot of people moved away from that more organic, natural thoughts that we were starting to feel. And then, you know, we've kind of gotten back to it. And I'm really feeling like, one, we have better information now, better ways of sharing and supporting each other. And I'm really feeling, like you said, that it's a different movement. My daughter is 29, and she and her friends would always have cookouts in our backyard, and there'd be tomatoes they could pluck and flowers. And my daughter swore she'd never garden. Well, you know what? She's a cook, and I helped her plant tomatoes and herbs, and she's like, okay, I want to expand the garden. And her daughter, my granddaughter, I'm brainwashing to be a good gardener too, watered the containers and helped her mom. And she's gardening for different reasons than I did, though she still finds the relaxation. But her motivation is about fixing good-tasting food. Mine was about growing a beautiful garden that I enjoyed, and food was a nice benefit. Like you, I just eat the stuff out of the garden. I didn't need to cook it. So it's been interesting, and I see that change in gardening, and I think it's exciting because people may not want the coolest cone flower that's out there, but they want a beautiful flower, or they want something that tastes good or brings in the butterflies or feeds the birds. So I think it's a grand time for gardening, as you said.
I'm kind of excited because we have an old pool table in the basement, and we set up a grow light. Oh, and here we are in January, and I just planted a Trinidad scorpion pepper from Baker Creek.
Ooh.
A million Scovilles.
Fun. How many?
A million Scovilles.
You better label that well.
Skull and crossbones. I could use it to heat the house, I'm hoping, in a few months.
I think you could. Yeah. Or at least you'll feel hot enough, it won't matter how cold it is.
They didn't even exist a generation ago, or if they did, who knew where they were growing. But
Well, and that, you're right, there's a lot of cool new vegetables, and there's so many new things. I was just writing a tip on ketchup and fries, which is the grafted tomato potato. That it's a cherry tomato on top and it's potatoes on the bottom. And I was trying to find out if it was available, if you could get it in Canada. I know Territorial Seeds and Garden America is selling it, and I couldn't tell from their websites if they'd send it over the border. But it was developed in the UK, introduced last year there, and now is available at least in the United States, hopefully in Canada as well, and other parts of the world. But it's, you know, it's a novelty, but you should get 500 cherry tomatoes, they say, and about 4.5 pounds of potatoes. And for me, inspiring gardeners is about finding what makes it exciting, whether it's food, whether it's birds and butterflies, or if it's something fun like this. You know, I think my grandkids will get a kick out of this, you know, showing them the potatoes. You know, they thought it was cool when we harvested peanuts. Wow, that's where they are. They're underground. They start above ground. And, you know, I didn't know you could grow peanuts in Wisconsin. Not profitably, but yes. You know, so I think you're right. I think that's an exciting thing. And some of those unique things like the extremely hot peppers or ornamental tomatoes that look good in a pot with flowers. So exciting times, lots of new introductions, a lot of plants to keep track of or try to at least be familiar with.
You know, Melinda, I think we accidentally answered number 5, which was, is there anything that you've never grown before that you would love to try and experiment with?
Yes. There's always my long list every year to try something new. I planted kiwi in my garden, and figs, as I mentioned. I am going to try, I've got blueberries in a pot. I'm going to try to put them in the ground this year. I've got room for passion vine, and I want to see, some people in Wisconsin have grown it successfully. I've grown it in a pot as an annual, but I want to try to get some plants started in the ground. And I did plant some peaches and nectarine, which can survive short term here. So yeah, you can tell I have a long list of things that I am trying ketchup and fries. I put my order in. Last year I talked about on-deck corn that you can grow in a container, and I talked about it and was so excited. By the time I ordered, they were sold out. So this year I ordered the plants before I started talking about them. So I'm trying ketchup and fries is one that I'm excited about for this coming season.
For those of you listening, well, actually, if you hear me, you're listening. You're in your car, you're jogging. Head over to the blog at backtomygarden.com, episode 83. Follow Melinda on social media, on Twitter at Melinda Gardens. And please share her blog and support it at www.melindamyers.com. The time has flown by, hasn't it?
Oh, it has. Well, when we started chatting, I knew, you know, it's always fun to talk to a fellow gardener and someone who shares the passion. So thank you. It's been a fun time for me, and thank you for the opportunity, Dave.
I took about a half a page of notes, and I'll try to translate them into English and put them up on the blog. I want to give you, Melinda, the last word to the listeners today all over the world, 30-plus countries. Can you leave them with either a note of a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement on their gardening adventures?
You know, it is an adventure, and the goal should be to have fun. And if at first you don't succeed, keep trying, because part of that adventure is what you learn along the way. And you will meet wonderful people, gather great knowledge, and there's always something new to learn. So how can you not love something that brings you peace, happiness, something to eat, something beautiful to look at, and something new to learn every day?
Absolutely brilliant. I knew you'd be fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show, Melinda.
Thank you.